Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Pro wrestling is popular across the country, but here in Appalachia, it's a big deal.
This area has been hit so hard financially, and you know, it kind of gives them something to look forward to and kind of forget their problems for a little bit and just come out and enjoy a night of wrestling.
We'll step beyond the curtain and spend a day in the life of one local wrestler known as Rocky Rage, who's teaching his three-year-old daughter some wrestling moves.
Who wins most often?
She's undefeated.
But wrestling takes its toll on performers and their families.
A lot of the wrestlers are married, they have kids, they're getting older. You don't want to see somebody in 5 years be in so much pain they can't do anything because of wrestling.
I tore my quad, I tore my meniscus, I tore my MCL, I broke two ribs, I broke my nose twice, I had 8 staples in my head, I had my heart stopped and had to have CPR done on me, which cracked my sternum.
We're going to take a look back at an episode we aired earlier this year that explores the world of indie pro wrestling inside Appalachia.
Inside Appalachia is supported in part by the West Virginia Food and Farm Coalition, helping West Virginia farmers markets provide food harvested that morning and brought to you fresh from the farm. Local market locations available at farmfreshwv.com.
Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Today's episode, we step through the ropes and into what's known as the squared circle of professional wrestling inside Appalachia. While pro wrestling is popular across the country and all around the world, the sport has a rich and storied history here in Appalachia. Today, we'll take a glimpse at the action, intensity, and drama, real life and otherwise, that happens between the ropes. Later, we'll meet one of West Virginia's most popular and now most hated professional wrestlers, Rocky Rage. For this show, we invited one of our colleagues here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, Adam Harris, onto the show. You might know him as the executive producer of Mountain Stage with Larry Gross, but today he's going to help us navigate the world of wrestling. He's attended wrestling matches since he was a teenager and been a fan of wrestling basically his whole life. And Adam, I understand this wasn't your intent, but you actually became involved as a ring announcer with the organization we'll hear about today in Madison, West Virginia. You're working with a company called All-Star Wrestling, or ASW. So tell us about this group, and how would it be different from, say, WWE or WWF, as it was known?
Yeah, most people's image of professional wrestling is associated with WWE, which brought you the most recognizable characters in wrestling, like Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, and John Cena's of the world.
The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
Look at the size of the giant. I mean, Hogan is 6'8".
Andre is 7'5".
Hulk Hogan. I had one of those wrestling buddies and Macho Man wrestling buddies. We loved those things as kids. My brother had one, and I think it was really an excuse to, like, beat up each other with a soft pillow, you know?
Exactly. My memories are the same. I still have my Jake the Snake wrestling buddy. But independent wrestling has changed greatly over the years, and it continues to evolve. It exists on a much smaller, localized scale than what you're used to seeing on television. Indie wrestling is way more DIY. It's run by a small group of passionate, dedicated performers and support staff who often work for little money or just a chance to even be on the card. ASW is one of many independent wrestling companies in Appalachia. There are dozens of promoters running in various venues throughout the region, but ASW runs as frequently as others, and the shows have built a really dedicated following, which is great to see.
Yeah, it seems like I hear about a lot of wrestling shows even in, like, southern West Virginia and Mercer County and Raleigh County. But we'll get to that show in just a bit. First, tell me how you got this gig as ring announcer there in Madison.
Well, I wasn't looking to get a gig in wrestling at all. When I've been a fan of wrestling my whole life, but I always resisted the urge to get involved in any capacity, really, other than being a fan. It was still a fantasy world to me, and I wanted to be able to visit it anytime I wanted without getting involved behind the scenes or having any responsibilities. Like many forms of entertainment, wrestling was and still is my escape mechanism. But when I started working on this piece, I got to know Dave Allen, who was a ring announcer at the time for ASW, and he's the one that volunteered to take me backstage so I could start collecting this audio. But then I didn't realize that Dave was kind of stepping away from the business, and so he started introducing me as his replacement. Before I was even ready to do it, before I had even committed, he was introducing me as his replacement as ring announcer, even though I'd never announced a single match in my entire life. I guess he just knew I was passionate about it and would think it was fun. And so I ended up, 2 years later, I'm still the ring announcer at ASW.
Nice. So whether you liked it or not, you were going to be the ring announcer.
And believe me, I really like it.
Nice. So when I decided to explore the world of independent wrestling in West Virginia, I climbed in the car with Dave Allen, who was the first person to take me behind the scenes at ASW. Allen is a 29-year veteran of the wrestling business who has spent many hours in the car driving to countless number of wrestling shows. He points out that the performers we'd see at the show that night take their spot on the ASW roster as seriously as they would a spot on the WWE roster. It's a big deal.
A lot of these guys, they have families. They have full-time jobs. If WWE walked in today and said, we want to hire you five guys, four out of five aren't going to go because they can't. And that's not why they go into it. There's something that lit a fire with them and a spark within them that made them want to do that. I can tell you, and I'm an announcer, but I can tell you that if you looked at all of the matches I've done in my career, and in February will be my 29th year in the business, I will tell you I have probably not gotten paid more nights than I've gotten paid.
For anybody that gets involved in the wrestling business, they can count on some long drives, plenty of war stories, and some long-standing traditions. Sometimes it can mean showing up even though there's a chance you're not getting paid. The last time I climbed in with Dave, I unknowingly broke one of his traditions, but he wasn't going to let that happen this time.
And if you will oblige me 1 second here.
We got to listen to your song.
Yeah, this is kind of a tradition that I started with Tommy Gibson years ago.
You queued it up.
That we listen to this song. Before you, are you going to pay royalties on this? If you use this, we listen to this every show, kind of get you in the mode. Well, Tommy and I started this about 10 years or so ago. I guess I don't even know why we started it, but we did.
Before I found out about ASW, I hadn't been to Madison before, and I didn't expect to see so many people there that early. When we step out of the car, 2 hours until showtime, there are fans already lining up outside the door. The Madison Civic Center is surrounded by houses, basically in the middle of this quaint domestic neighborhood, and I'll never forget when I got out of the car that day, there were three deer grazing in the yard next door. Something else I wasn't expecting, as the ring announcer, Dave, had his own entrance music.
It's the legendary Dave Allen.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna. Madison, West Virginia! Madison, West Virginia! Are you ready?
You can hear how excited the fans are. They look forward to these shows, and the thing that keeps them coming back is the storytelling. It's this amplified soap opera. There are friendships, bitter feuds, with aggression at the core of the conflicts. And just like any good soap opera, the characters are wrapped up in drama.
What recap a little bit what happened last time we were here in Madison, and then what we might see tonight.
I guess the big thing last time was that Shane Storm, who was, you know, a fan favorite, very popular tag team with Rocky Rage. They were called Rage and Storm. Rocky moved out of state, went to work for another promotion in Texas, and Shane kind of felt betrayed by him.
While Rocky Rage was gone, his former tag team partner Shane Storm, in his disgusted state of betrayal, was granted a shot at the ASW Championship, and he won. So as you might have predicted, this didn't set very well when Rocky Rage eventually returned to ASW.
Well, how about this? I'm here to say that the Knockout Specialist, Rocky Rage, is back, baby!
On this night, Rocky was ready to take his title back. But in classic heel fashion, Shane Storm wasn't obliging that easy.
You know, as much as I would love to put my newly won beautiful ASW championship on the line, let's not forget, you start at the bottom of the barrel, kid.
All right, wait a minute. Hold up. So you said Shane Storm is being a heel? That's wrestling for jerk, right?
Right. The bad guys. They're known as the heels, which is its own art form, and Shane Storm is great at it. And in this case, Rocky Rage was the babyface, the crowd favorite. So this was 2 years ago, and now Rocky and Shane have actually joined forces. But we're going to hear more about that later in the show. All this drama, all this violence mean little without the reaction and the energy of the crowds that fill every ASW show.
So give yourself a round of applause for being the best fans in the world right here in Madison, West Virginia.
The crowd is no different than any West Virginia high school sporting event. Plenty of kids, small children to teenagers, lots of families. Of course, there's parents, grandparents, and inevitably there's one or two people who you can tell by the look on their face are not that into it. They brought their kid or their loved one who loves wrestling, and that's the only reason why they're sitting there in the audience, surrounded by screaming fans and music blaring. Some of the adults you can tell came straight from work, whether that's a teacher, mechanic, coal miners. People of all kinds come and they love to watch wrestling. On one side of the court, the bleachers are extended and a basketball hoop hangs from the rafters. When the lights go down and it's finally showtime, the wrestling ring sets brightly lit in the center of the arena, and the stage for tonight's impending drama has been set. Here in Madison, West Virginia, fans come out regularly, at least a few hundred of them each time when ASW promotes their events, usually about 10 a year. I spoke to Brandon Burns, who is one of those regulars.
I'm the head coach of Scott High School girls basketball. We brought our girls basketball team here for like a team bonding, and you can see three or four of them are even here tonight. So it's just something fun to do that we don't have to drive to Charleston. It's one of the few, well, it's really the only thing really in town that we can do once a month and come out. And as soon as it's over, we're home in 5 minutes, and it's just a lot of fun. I don't ride four-wheelers. I don't play golf, you know. I basically just teach school, coach, raise my family. It's nice to be able to come and do something that I enjoy, which is watching wrestling once a month, that where I don't have to put out $40, $50 to watch a WWE event in Charleston. I can come here for $10, bring my whole family for under $50, and have a great time.
And while it's smaller and more intimate than, say, the Charleston Civic Center, where the WWE does live events a couple times a year, that intimacy is what some fans love the most.
Not expensive. I mean, we could pay a lot more money to go see other wrestling, but we don't. We come here.
That's Travis Craddock, who's been attending ASW shows since promoter Gary Dameron first started over 10 years ago. He and his family hardly miss a show.
Who did you come to the show with tonight?
My daughter Emma, my dad Robert, and my son Jackson.
Why do you think it's important for Gary to do shows here in Madison?
It brings families together, gives us something to do. There's not much to do, and Gary has provided a lot of entertainment over the years.
Here's ASW founder and promoter Gary Dameron, who organizes all of ASW's shows.
This area has been hit so hard financially, and you know, a lot of jobs have been lost here, and you know, this is considered the coal country, and so a lot of people are out of work. And you know, having a show like this in a small town where, you know, people really don't have nothing to look forward to, you know, it kind of gives them something to look forward to and kind of forget their problems for a little bit and just come out and enjoy a night of wrestling.
Like a lot of forms of entertainment, wrestling provides escape. It's a safe place where we can go to forget our problems and be in our own universe. Here's what Rocky Rage, the wrestler we mentioned earlier, says about how wrestling helped him get away from some of the gangs and drugs that many of his other friends were getting into.
Wrestling was my escape. Wrestling was something that I could watch and, you know, want to do. So I think if it wasn't for that, I mean, I don't think I would have went down a different path, but I think it helped keep me away from certain settings. I think it was something that made me stay away from some of my other friends that were, you know, getting involved in gangs and this and that. And it's like, nah, I can, you know, I can go wrestle and learn how to body slam somebody. I think I'll do that instead.
So this is more than just what people might see as entertainment. And you mentioned before, Adam, this is an escape for you. How has this been an escape for you? Can you talk about that even as a kid?
Yeah, there's there's a lot of elements of superhero references to what they do in professional wrestling. I like to think of it as like this combination of theater and sport and superhumanism. It's kind of like mixed martial arts meets Guardians of the Galaxies in a lot of ways. And even though it's scripted and you learn more as you grow older, you learn more about the inner workings of the business and you become increasingly fascinated by that stuff, I think as you grow older, you also start to appreciate the things that you loved as a child. Those things become even more precious to you. And so in 2015, around the time I started working on this piece, my dad got diagnosed with a terminal cancer, and I started to take a, you know, more and more stock in the things that were important to me. And I think that's why I was so interested in – I didn't realize it at the time, but that's why I got so passionately into working behind the scenes in professional wrestling, because it gave me an outlet. I knew that nobody there knew that my dad was even sick. I knew that they were going to be happy to see me and I was going to have a great time. And no matter what was waiting for me at the end of the show, I knew I would have those 3 or 4 hours to just be in the world of wrestling for a little while and forget everything else that's going on in life.
So let's talk about that for a minute and back up. So your dad was diagnosed with cancer and you started holding on to things as a kid. Obviously, some of those memories that probably involved your dad. Was this like a conscious effort to try and find something to escape from that, to keep your mind from, you know, going to really dark places? That had to be really tough.
I didn't realize it until after my dad passed away, which was almost 2 years later in April of 2017. And I realized then, because I had a show to go to in Logan, West Virginia, 2 days after my dad died. And even though it had been a 2-year battle, he had passed away, and I knew I had this show in the books. And I had written to Dustin and Gary at ASW, and I told them, hey, there's a chance I might not be able to make it. My dad's really sick right now, but I wanted you guys to know how much it has meant to me to have this family of wrestlers to go to while he's been dealing with this and while my family's been dealing with it. But so dad passed away, and 2 days later I worked a show in Logan. And that's what dad would have wanted. He would have wanted me to hold on to my commitments. Those people were expecting me, and I was able to make it. And, you know, not very many people knew that my dad had passed away. And I kind of liked it that way. I just wanted to be in the moment, have the wrestling show. It's still kind of blurry to me. I was still emotionally a wreck. But one of the other one of the commentators at ASW, Nathan, his dad had passed away earlier in the year, and we immediately talked, and he said, I know what you're going through, and we had a hug. But after that, it was showtime. It was time to get to work. And I was so glad to have that to look forward to. And now I still love having those shows to look forward to. It's the thing that gives me the motivation to live through all the other frustrations in life. As long as there's another wrestling show around the corner, I know I have something to look forward to.
And behind the scenes, it sounds like you had that camaraderie. And, you know, even though you'd been there for a short time, you had the one person individually that could reach out and you could kind of talk to him. Do you think that's different from other types of groups in the wrestling group?
It wasn't what I was expecting, that's for sure. I was so nervous to go backstage and into the locker room of a wrestling show. I just had never wanted to do that, never had any desire. And I was nervous, really nervous about it. And I kind of thought there might be like egos, and I thought people would be resistant and defensive and closed off. Well, they weren't that at all. It was completely friendly. It was a fun backstage atmosphere.
And you mean like as you were transitioning into this announcer, you were thinking, wait, I've always been a fan. I don't know if I want to take a peek behind the curtains.
Right, or am I even worthy to be involved? Do these guys, are they going to accept me because they don't know me? All they had to know was Dave Allen's reference. But thankfully, that was a good enough reference to where they welcomed me in and they took me on board immediately, and it's been great working with ASW ever since.
Thank you, Adam, for sharing that story.
This is fun. I'm so glad we got to do this.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll learn a bit more about Rocky Rage and the person he is when he's not in the ring. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. We'll be right back.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu. Inside Appalachia is supported in part by the West Virginia Food and Farm Coalition, helping farmers share their food with your family every week at your local farmers market. Local market locations available at farmfreshwv.com.
You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Today we're going inside the world of local independent pro wrestling. We're exploring the people behind this culture because it's really popular here in Appalachia. And just like in other parts of the country, fans are usually pretty passionate and loyal to the world of wrestling. Do you have memories of watching live wrestling in your hometown? Send us a message about how wrestling has impacted your life to insideappalachia@wvpublic.org or send us a tweet to @InAppalachia. We also love real mail. Our address is 600 Capitol Street, Charleston, West Virginia, 25301. Before the break, we heard a bit about one local wrestler who goes by Rocky Rage. We wanted to follow him in part because he had a unique shift from local hero to bad guy. Our West Virginia Public Broadcasting wrestling expert, Adam Harris, is here with me in the studio. So, Adam, tell us more about this shift. How has Rocky Rage changed in the past year since you've been recording these matches?
As you mentioned, Rocky used to be one of the most beloved local characters here in ASW. Here he is sticking up for himself against another wrestler, Shane Storm.
You and I, we've had our past. We've left blood in this ring, on this floor. We put everything behind us and we became good friends. And the first time I leave, you want to get a little attitude and become a little crybaby and try to run my name in the ground?
And that was him actually being a good guy. Now he's even more arrogant. He's the guy who's completely full of himself. He talks back to the crowd. He calls himself the savior of wrestling.
Wow.
When he comes out in the arena, he snarls. He makes faces at the audience. He says he's even made kids cry, and he loves that.
Those poor kids, right? So what does he wear? What does he look like? What's his look?
His outfit's pretty basic. It's similar to a mixed martial arts fighter with kick pads on his shins, and he has heavily taped wrists. There's dragons on his shorts. Rocky doesn't have a bodybuilder look, but he is wide, he's this imposing figure, and he knows the strength of a good snarl.
In a few minutes, we'll hear more about Rocky's switch from local hero to the most hated villain in Boone County. But before we get into the feud that surrounds Rocky Rage's recent change in heart, we wanted to know more about who Rocky is when he's not in the ring and see if he'd let us peek behind the curtain, so to speak, and get a little personal. Rocky shared this story with our producer, Roxy Todd. Roxy, you've been spending some time documenting Rocky at home and in the locker room when he's not wrestling. Hop in here and tell us what you found. Who is the man behind the mask of Rocky Rage?
Yeah, so Rocky Rage by day is a man named Rocky Harden. He has a wife, a daughter, and just like most West Virginians, they're a very busy family. His wife works crazy long hours, and he's often out of town wrestling. But they let me spend a little time with them when they were all sitting in their living room hanging out together.
I'm like Avery.
That's Rocky's 3-year-old daughter, Avery. She's got blonde hair, and when I stopped over to Rocky's house, it was a Sunday afternoon, and she had a coloring book on the floor with a stack of pens, a highlighter, and a box of colored pencils.
This is chaos. I got this chaos.
Which one you want?
This pencil. You tell them it definitely will get.
She loves to color, like that's her thing. Like, if you give her some crayons and a coloring book, she's content for ever. It's pretty cool.
Avery is a big wrestling fan.
We've taken her to some WWE shows in Charleston. She goes crazy. She loves it.
This is Rocky's wife, Jamie. They tell me Rocky is even teaching Avery some wrestling moves.
Who wins most often?
She's undefeated.
Avery is undefeated. She's never lost. Yeah.
2.5 years undefeated.
Avery loves to see her dad wrestle most of the time.
The only time she's ever freaked out at a show was I was bleeding a little bit and I'm in the locker room.
Real blood?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Jamie came back to the locker room and Avery saw me and she saw me with blood on my face and she was like, you know, she freaked out just a little bit. So I ran, hurried up, took a shower, got the blood to stop. And then she was cool. Then she was, like, you know, interested in the boo-boos. But so it's like if I know there's going to be a match to where there's a chance, like if I go to the show and there's, you know, going to be blood in the match, it's definitely something that I don't want her to see anymore.
So wrestling is a part of Rocky's family life, too. Actually, wrestling is how he and his wife first got together. Rocky was training Jamie to learn wrestling, and the two just hit it off.
And we talked all the time, and it kind of led from there. I didn't really want a relationship, per se. I was super attracted to him, but I wanted to wrestle. But, I mean, undeniable chemistry is chemistry, and we've been together ever since.
So wait a minute, does she wrestle professionally?
Not right now. Jamie says she'd like to get back in the ring, but she's had some back issues that make that tough. And that's something that worries her about Rocky, too. He's had a few neck injuries while wrestling, and she's terrified that one of these days he could be severely injured.
Every time, every single match, I worry. And I see it with other wrestlers, too, you know? Like, a lot of the wrestlers are married, they have kids, they're getting older. You don't want to see somebody in 5 years be in so much pain they can't do anything because of wrestling.
But at the same time,
I really couldn't imagine if he wasn't a wrestler. It's such a big part of who he is.
And when I began following Rocky in the ring, I think he was actually working as a nursing assistant.
Right. He recently decided to step away from that for now. It was tough work, long hours, and he hardly ever got to see his daughter.
It was taking a toll on me to where I think I was just getting to be miserable to be around.
Now he's focusing on his wrestling career.
And that's good to hear because lately he's been traveling to be on the card at some out-of-state shows.
And we should say he is being paid to wrestle in these matches, right?
He is. When I asked him how much he earns, he said he didn't want to start drama between wrestlers because it can be a sensitive issue. But Rocky said it is enough that he can pay the bills. His local home base remains the ASW ring in Madison. Eventually, he'd like to open a wrestling school in southern West Virginia. Rocky already trained some of the younger wrestlers at the ASW ring. Here he is teaching a young woman named Lachey White to do a body slam.
Oh, that one hurt. That one hurt. I know. And it goes right back to the wrestling takes time. There's no rush. Never rush.
It's a little hard to hear, but what Rocky is telling her is wrestling takes time. He got his start just like this, learning from other wrestlers in Portsmouth, Ohio, where he grew up.
And there are wrestling schools throughout the country, but those can be expensive and require huge time and financial commitments that a lot of local wrestlers just can't afford. So like Rocky, most aspiring wrestlers get some of their only and earliest in-ring training in moments like this, before the doors have opened and the audience files in. On show days in Madison, Rocky gets to the Civic Center around 2 o'clock, and he works for about 3 hours training some of the newer wrestlers. Most of the coaches like Rocky can charge for training. It's not a lot. Sometimes they'll offer tips to each other casually, but normally if you want to train and take it seriously, you should expect to pay a bit of money for someone to help teach you.
Then, after he trains people, around 5 o'clock, Rocky goes down to the locker room to start getting ready for his match. On this particular night, he was scheduled to wrestle a team from Pennsylvania he'd never met before, called Tough Guy Inc.
Yeah, their wrestling names are Brutal Bob and Tough Tim. And even though they are veteran wrestlers and they've been seen on national television, stepping into the ring with someone for the first time can heighten anxiety.
It could be challenging sometimes when you're never the guy that you don't know, because it's a lot of trust. You know, you're literally trusting somebody with your life. If you have someone pick you up, you're hoping that you're able to walk when he puts you down.
This is something I've heard a lot from the wrestlers since I've started announcing wrestling events. It's the concept of trust. It's something you might not think about, and while they definitely don't want to break the illusion that they're tough guys trying to beat each other up, essentially wrestling is a collaborative process. If the wrestlers can't trust one another, there's a bigger chance they're going to get injured.
It's always in the back of my mind, injuries. Make sure that I seriously don't hurt anybody and nobody, you know, does it to me. My goal for tonight, walk out of the ring, hope the fans love it, and hope I'm able to walk. So yeah, that's what's been going through my head since about 9 o'clock this morning.
And part of this anxiety comes from experience. Like I mentioned earlier, Rocky's injured himself several times while wrestling.
My chiropractor told me that I am a chiropractor's nightmare.
Even though there's an element of wrestling that's predetermined and choreographed, it's still very physical. And these guys are taking real hits, taking stiff falls, and it really takes its toll on their bodies.
Yeah, Rocky told me that before a match, he's going over in his mind some of the moves he might expect to do or have done to him. but he's also mostly just hanging out in the locker room with his wrestling buddies. His gear bag is basically the suitcase with whatever clothes and knee pads and boots he's going to wear.
About four different things of deodorant. I have my body wash, a sucker that I think my daughter put in my gear bag sometime this morning. So, other than that, I have no explanation for that at all. Got the Febreze.
There's enough dryer sheets in here to last the household a month.
Look, right here, brother.
About 10 other wrestlers have joined Rocky in the locker room at this point. These are guys Rocky has wrestled with for years. Since Rocky grew up in Ohio, all his family live out of state, and he says these guys sometimes feel like his brothers.
So, like, the boys in the locker room are my family. Like, I would go to war for any one of these guys in this room right now.
One of his best friends here is Shane Storm.
Everything good?
That's his wrestling name. His real name is Matt Wolf, and when they wrestle tonight, they're going to be tag team partners. So they're on the same team, but they've wrestled against each other a lot here in Madison.
Rocky told me about one match he remembers in particular.
And we went out there, and we beat the crap out of each other in that match. That was one of the most brutal matches I think I had. We both had bruises, like, in the form of a chain. Like, you could look at the bruise and say, that looks like a chain. We were hitting each other with a chain. Like, we would take it and use it like a whip and just slap each other on the back, wrapped around, got me in the face. I think once you get that level of, like, brotherhood, you know, like me and him have, we can go out there and it's like, we can lay in the hits as hard as we can. And when we get in the back, it's like, all right, good job. You know, no hard feelings. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, everything's fine. So we can go out there and you know, knock each other's teeth out. And when we get back here, be able to hug and, all right, good deal. We done what we needed to do.
There's another legendary fight between Rocky Rage and Shane Storm that has become Madison wrestling lore. Rocky's wife, Jamie, got in the ring, and Shane Storm actually beat her up.
Nailed her good right in the face, too. Yeah, we done a thing where I end up getting beat up. He hits me with a chair a few times. My wife comes out, and then he kicks her in the face. And that was on the verge of a riot. Like, people were hitting him, like they were trying to get to him. He actually had a fan or two hit him. It was fun.
Of course, the point of all this is getting a big reaction from the crowd. And these fights probably got the most passionate reaction in ASW history.
Here's what Rocky's wife remembers about that fight.
The crowd was absolutely beyond themselves. They could not believe that he had just done that. Like, the adrenaline you get from that, it's amazing.
But then, a little while after that epic fight, Rocky Rage actually turned into a villain. See, for years, he's been the local hero here in Madison. And when he lost the heavyweight championship, his character did a 180.
When I turned, you know, on my buddy and was the bad guy, like, kids were crying and running out of the building. It was crazy. I got a few death threats.
He might be a bad guy in the ring, but seeing him interact with the other wrestlers in the locker room, I got a different picture.
I can't say he's nice in front of people, but he's nice.
Because it would mess with the persona?
Absolutely, yeah.
This is Casey Shingleton, a.k.a. the Dark Horse, one of the wrestlers Rocky is training. Since Rocky went from being a hero to a villain, Shingleton says the audience has changed.
I mean, Rocky's same dude. You know, he hasn't changed a bit. He and I still talk on the phone for hours. In the audience, I've noticed that they've started to gravitate more towards the bad guys here. They seem to like the villains, that's for sure.
It was about 8 in the evening when we recorded this. As you can hear, the match had already started, and in fact, Adam, you were upstairs announcing the matches at this point, right?
Fight night here at the ASW Madison.
Yeah, and earlier that day, I had volunteered to pick up one of the performers at the airport, someone who was supposed to be in the main event. Eventually, they asked someone else to wait for him so that I could make it down to the show, and we thought he still might make it to Boone County in time for the match.
About an hour or two after the event started, these travel issues were causing some extra stress for Rocky. News came in that the main event had to be changed because of the flight delay. So the lineup got switched around, matches and opponents were shifted, and Rocky would now be in the main event.
But yeah, my head is just going every different direction because making sure everyone knows what we're doing tonight. I still, as you can tell, haven't got dressed yet.
But he still didn't get dressed at this point, because one of Rocky's close friends, one of the wrestlers, learned that his best friend killed himself. Rocky and all the guys backstage were there with him right after he found out. I saw them hugging him and comforting him. It was just this really emotional time for all of them.
Yeah, that's that brotherhood thing. Like, we're there when, like, I don't know, something happens. Like, if one of these guys need me in the middle of the night, hey, hold on. I'm getting into my car right now, and I'm out the door, and vice versa. Like, that's just how it is.
So this is all happening backstage. All these raw emotions, and upstairs, another match is going on. The crowd has no idea anything unusual has happened. Rocky says even having us there recording backstage is unusual, having the press step behind the curtain, so to speak, see what it's like down in the locker rooms. This is a whole new world to most wrestlers.
Like 20, 30 years ago, we wouldn't even be sitting here doing this, you know, because the business was protected a lot more back then. And if you came up and you said, oh, wrestling, is it fake? Is it scripted? Oh, you were going to get chased out of the locker room, you know?
Rocky does eventually leave to go get dressed for his match. And in his mind, he starts to prepare.
Usually I'll say a little prayer. A lot of people don't know that, but I'll say a little prayer and just, you know, everything goes okay. Everybody's safe. Everybody gets home safe and hope everyone's well. But that's something I do and a few other guys do before they go out.
And then it's time for the match. It's an 8-man tag team match, 4 tag partners on each team.
Introducing first, the ASW Tag Team Champions, Matt Houston, Lewis Moore, the Mid-Atlantic Outlaws. Their tag team partners first, from Fargo, North Dakota, he is the ASW X Division Champion, Shane Storm.
And Rocky Rage comes out, and the crowd goes nuts. Mostly they're booing. I saw kids stand on their chairs yelling, and grown-ups who just kept yelling, "Rocky sucks," all throughout the match.
As we already know, this wasn't the intended main event. But even though it was changed last minute, the guys had a great match.
Anything can happen here in ASW, including a big 8-man tag team main event we got here tonight.
This is the sound of the commentators during the match.
Rocky Rage now looks like he's going to start the match here with one half of Tough Guy Inc. Here we go.
But about 15 minutes into the match, things get a bit dicey for Rocky's team. His partner Shane Storm starts taking a beating.
Shane Storm's arm is just being dissected right now.
Oh, no, he's going to bite it.
Biting is technically against the rules, but the crowd loves that brutal Bob Evans from Tough Guys, Inc. is giving Shane Storm a taste of his own medicine. Then Tough Tim Hughes gets in the ring, taking out all 4 members of the other team.
Tough Guy, Inc. is on a roll.
Tim Hughes off in the corner. He's taking off.
House of fire. My goodness.
Rocky and his team are trying to regroup on the floor outside the ring. Meanwhile, their opponents line up on the edge of the ring, simultaneously dropping their forearms down on each member of Rocky's team.
Double axe handle!
Oh!
Off the apron onto SRO!
Would you call that a quartet of double axe handles?
Then Rocky's team gets back some ground, and Rocky gets into the ring.
Now Rocky Rage working over Mr. TNT right now.
Chris Taylor gets isolated, unable to tag his partners, and he takes a beating.
Oh, bang! Leg drop! 1, 2,
that's it.
No!
How does this guy keep going?
How did TNT kick out of that?
How does he keep going?
Taylor finally tags out, and Tough Guys Inc. take control again. Eventually, Tough Tim climbs up to the top rope, and his own partner, Brutal Bob, slams him onto the prone Shane Storm.
Oh! God!
Ow!
Just threw him! 1, 2, 3! That's it!
And Rocky's team loses the match.
And as Rocky was leaving the ring, I saw this family beside me. They were booing at Rocky. And so Rocky turned to them and snarled. And this little girl, she laughed because she got the reaction that she was hoping for as he left the ring. Backstage, Rocky says of all the fans, it's the kids' reactions that he appreciates most.
I love seeing the kids. That cracks me up. Whether they're booing me, cussing me, flipping me off, that's funny. I had an 8-year-old use words that I was just blown away that he knew. That's what it's all about. It's awesome. It's a rush.
And all this action has the crowd fired up. But one thing about ASW matches is there's no alcohol served here.
That's something that this company prides itself on, is the fact that, hey, it's a family-oriented, a family show, no drugs, no alcohol. I mean, there's a police station, I think it's attached or something, but there's cops all over the place. A few of the cops are actually in the crowd as fans, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, I think it's something positive, you know, and it shows kids, like, you don't have to have, like, alcohol at a function to just cut loose, have fun, and I think there needs to be more of that, you know?
And that's why he would love to open up his own wrestling school, eventually.
And if a kid can escape and pretty much do the same thing that I've done, then I feel like I won. I feel like I succeeded with something. And I know it sounds cheesy, like, oh, you know, for the kids. But, I mean, it really is. I've especially after I had my daughter. Like, after I had my daughter, it's like, no. Like, it's completely changed my whole mindset on everything. So hopefully I can get some stuff up and running around here and do something positive for the community. I mean, they support us, you know. I think it's only fair we do something back for them.
For now, though, Rocky says he's not planning on stepping back from the spotlight anytime soon.
Everybody asks me, I get that question a lot, they're like, especially after some people find out, like, you know, some of the injuries that I've had, they're like, why don't you just, you know, can you step away? It's like, yeah, at some point, but right now it's just too much of an adrenaline rush. And every time I think about taking a break, something happens and it just sucks me right back in. So for the foreseeable future, this is my life.
And as you can tell, it's hard to let go. I mean, Rocky has these injuries to his body that he's gotten while wrestling, yet he's still really passionate about the world of independent pro wrestling. And, you know, sometimes this passion translates to a passion for teaching. There are different types of schools across the country. One just opened in Parkersburg, West Virginia. A former indie pro wrestler owns it. Roxy went to visit the school called the Bent Barbell Club. Roxy, what did you find?
So most of the people who use the Bent Barbell Gym aren't wrestlers. They're just people who use the equipment to work out. Tim Hagen owns this gym. He used to wrestle under the name of Vance Desmond or Violent Vance Desmond, depending on whether he was the villain or the good guy. And used to actually be the champion at ASW Wrestling in Madison back in the day.
Now, did you most often play the good guy or the villain?
Typically a villain, just out of personal preference. It's just way easier to make people hate you than it is to make them like you. So typically I was a villain normally.
And how many years did you wrestle?
About 12 on a regular basis, and then a couple shows a year for 2 more years probably. I did 544 professional matches.
And what made you decide to kind of step back and start training rather than be in the ring?
Mostly injuries. I tore my quad, I tore my meniscus, I tore my MCL. I broke 2 ribs, I broke my nose twice, I had 8 staples in my head. They thought I had a broken neck at one point. I broke my arm. I had my heart stopped and had to have CPR done on me, which cracked my sternum, all in the course of those years. So, and then I have a daughter who just turned 5. So I like to be able to walk whenever she's, you know, older. So I decided, yeah, it's, you know, I've went as far as I could go, and I was like, I'm done for now. So.
And the cost of these injuries really adds up. Tim Hagen says some wrestlers do get health insurance coverage through their employers outside of wrestling, but wrestling organizations from the local level to the national level don't provide coverage.
Some wrestlers have done to the point where they can get in the Screen Actors Guild. And you can get insurance through there, especially if you do any even smaller independent things. You can still get in the Screen Actors Guild, and you can get insurance through them. But besides that, you buy it all on your own. The companies you work for, you work as an independent contractor. Even the WWE does not cover you insurance-wise, which is crazy. But those guys are making, you know, six-figure salaries. It's not as big a deal. But these independent wrestlers will make $50, and then the injuries are just on them.
So did you accrue a lot of medical expenses throughout the years?
Oh, absolutely. The good thing about it was my wife is a school teacher. We have insurance through her. And then I worked for DuPont Chemical, and so insurance through that. So a lot of times that's what I was doing. But before, when I first started wrestling, yeah, it was just like whenever I had my heart stop, I had no insurance. It looked as like $80,000, something like that, with the ambulance ride and all that kind of stuff. So, oh, absolutely.
Any other lessons for wrestlers that are looking at maybe stepping back a little bit from the ring and looking into opening a similar type of wrestling school or gym?
Yeah, the whole thing is make sure. So there are a lot of wrestlers that do this, open up schools. Make sure you should, because there's a lot of people. A lot of people can get hurt. This is very dangerous. We put each other's life in the other person's hands. Like I trained with WWE for a year. I've trained with a lot of great people. So make sure you train with someone who knows what they're doing. And if you're going to open a school, make sure you go out and get the training. We don't let doctors be doctors after, you know, 6 months of training. So, and we're going to be picking up people and dropping them on their head. So we're doing something pretty dangerous too.
So he quit his day job because the business was doing well, it sounds like.
Yeah, he'd been working at DuPont Chemicals, and though he took a pay cut to stop that job to focus just on the gym, he says the business is breaking even, and they are about to graduate their first group of wrestlers. The wrestlers are basically training to compete in local matches, like at ASW, and eventually may even get into bigger matches across the country.
How much does he charge for this pro wrestling training?
He charges $125 a month, and that includes 6 hours of training a week. A course runs for 10 months, so students pay about $1,200 to go through the entire program.
And a lot of wrestlers maybe get in a similar place, and they wonder, what would life be like if I wasn't a wrestler? But in your case, you kind of have found a way to make wrestling a part of your life just in a different way, right?
Absolutely. That gives me like my wrestling fix, you know, because like I tried to retire probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I was always drawn back to do a match or two a year because, I mean, you miss it. You miss having something to train for. But then once I have the school, anytime I want to be in the ring, I can be in the ring. And I am, you know, a lot of times with my students, and I'll wrestle matches and practice against them, you know, a few times a year. So I still get a little bit of it that way. So I'm around the business a lot still, even without actually having to be an active wrestler. So.
Again, that was Tim Hagen, also known as Violent Vance Desmond, who owns the Bent Barbell Gym and Wrestling School in Parkersburg, West Virginia, speaking with Roxy Todd. If you've watched a lot of wrestling in certain parts of Appalachia, you might recognize that music. It's the theme from Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Smoky Mountain Wrestling ran shows throughout eastern Tennessee, western Kentucky, and southern West Virginia in the mid-90s. Their television show was carried on WOAY, a station out of Oak Hill, West Virginia. But as we'll hear in our next story, WOAY has a long, rich history of broadcasting independent wrestling long before that. Zach Harold is the managing editor at West Virginia Living Magazine. He wrote an article called Live from Oak Hill in the spring 2017 issue. Oak Hill is a town in Fayette County, West Virginia. It's home to the ABC broadcast TV affiliate station, WOAY. The station aired a weekly show called Saturday Night Wrestling from 1954 to 1977. Here's Zach talking with Adam Harris about his article.
So let's talk about some of the characters, because your piece is filled with them, just like the world of professional wrestling, filled with tons of characters. And I want to talk about the Cuban Assassin, because he was...
the most hated man in WOAY wrestling.
Which speaks a lot, again, to the fabric of America. This is a lot of what's going on in the world right now is reflected in wrestling. And that was the case in the 60s and 70s with WOAY wrestling and the Cuban Assassin.
Absolutely. That is one thing that really struck me as I was reporting this story. I mean, you look through the history of wrestling and you see characters like the Iron Sheik played off of the Iran-Contra scandal. You've got guys right now like the progressive liberal who are playing on the political climate of our time. I was actually took a trip to Mexico a couple months ago and went to Arena Mexico, the Lucha Libre wrestling there, and the big villain of the night was Sam Adonis, who came out wearing American flag trunks and waving a big flag with Donald Trump's face on it. And he was instantly, you know, the crowd reacted exactly the way he wanted them to.
They hate that guy.
The Cuban assassin played into the political climate of his time. It was, you know, it was the middle of the Cold War. The Cuban Missile Crisis was a not too distant memory. And here comes this guy who says he's the secret bodyguard of Fidel Castro, and he's an automatic heel. And you know, just with that backstory, he'd be hated enough. But he had this wild hair and this crazy look in his eyes. You can see it in some of the old videos that survive. And he was, you know, notorious for his dirty tactics in the ring, and people hated him. Never mind the fact that he wasn't actually Cuban. He was from Puerto Rico. He was not a secret bodyguard for anybody. He trained as a boxer in Puerto Rico and then realized that boxing was rigged, so he thought he might as well have some fun and do pro wrestling. Not that all boxing is rigged, but it was rigged in Puerto Rico at that time. And adopted this character that he lived so – he lived that character so much that his son thought the story was true. This is in the days of what wrestlers call kayfabe, where they never broke character. His son grew up thinking that Cuban assassin number two, his dad's tag team partner, was his actual uncle, when it was actually just a guy that Angel had met in Puerto Rico, and you know, they started working as a tag team. But growing up, Richie, Angel's son, thought that was his uncle. He thought that the story about Fidel Castro was true. His dad had a tattoo of a star on his hand that he would say was like the secret mark of Castro's regime or whatever. Not true. It was just a tattoo. And he believed it up until he was an adult.
And that was the man's own family.
Yeah, he lived it in the house. I mean, he lived the story everywhere he went.
So you talked to Marty Madrid, who was the son of Jan Madrid, and then you also talked with Richie Acevedo, who was the son of the Cuban assassin, Angel Acevedo. What are their relationships to the wrestling business all these years removed?
This was super interesting. Richie followed his dad into wrestling. He wrestled under the name the Cuban assassin. He looks just like his dad. They could pass for brothers. They wrestled as a tag team, I think, for a while. So he just completely fell in love with it. His dad trained him. They wrestled through Canada together. He's all about it. And he is now retired from the ring. He's trying to build an acting career. But just talking to him, you can feel the love that he has for wrestling. Marty went the complete opposite direction. He, you know, describes himself as kind of a nervous kid, even though he knew, he talks about his dad would tell him, like, when these guys get in the ring, you might want to step out because it's going to get pretty gruesome. He described himself as a nervous kid. He didn't like the excitement of wrestling. It made him nervous. He didn't like, I mean, he talks about they would come out of an event and all four tires of their car would be slashed. There would be sugar in their gas tank. They got receipts in the mail for televisions because people had shot their TVs. They got so mad at Jan Madrid, they would send them to their house. So, you know, it's hard being a heel. And Marty grew up in this household where people hated his dad. And I think it really soured him against wrestling. He was kind of hesitant to speak with me for this story, but we had a good conversation. But as I talked to him, it's really interesting. Marty, when he got to be a teenager, got into magic. He became a magician. He's still a magician, and he didn't see the relationship. I said, do you think you became a magician because your dad was a wrestler? I mean, it's all the same thing. It's creating an illusion for people. Two completely different art forms, but that's what it is. It's making people believe something. And he didn't see the connection at first. But I think that's definitely it. I mean, he saw the power of a performance, and whether he did it consciously or not, wanted to to do that himself.
And the magician is looking for the same thing that wrestler is looking for, which is the reaction of the audience.
Yeah. And you talk to these wrestlers, and that is the most addictive thing about it, to be able to create this illusion for people and to have people to buy into it and know that you can make them, you know, boo you and hate your guts or love you. That's super addicting. And Marty, even though he turned away from wrestling, even though he says he doesn't watch wrestling, he doesn't have any relationship with wrestling now, he's found a way to build that into his own life.
And there's one more part of your article that I want to mention, because there's a fascinating photo of a police report. And I would love to hear your experiences on both trying to find that police report and then also what the cause of the whole incident was.
This is the coolest thing about this story. I don't remember how I heard about it originally, but I went to the state archives and dug back through the microfilm. In 1969, a lot of the guys who wrestled for WOAY were down in Bluefield doing a benefit show. And who shows up but the State Athletic Commission? And, you know, this is in the days before, you know, wrestling was widely known. I think everybody had a winking acknowledgement that it wasn't, quote unquote, real. I keep saying that.
But the Athletic Commission would have been around to regulate all sporting events.
The Athletic Commission required wrestlers to pay fees. The Athletic Commission required referees to pay fees, just like boxing. You know, promoters had to pay fees. But Jan Madrid and the guys from WOAY didn't pay those fees, because their contention was that they were not athletes. They were performers. If the guy, you know, in the local production of Oklahoma didn't have to pay the Athletic Commission, why should they? So that they just didn't buy the licenses. Well, they're at this benefit show in Bluefield, and the State Athletic Commission shows up with the local police, and they take them all to jail. They arrest the wrestlers, they arrest the referees, they take the promoter to jail. The West Virginia Athletic Commissioner, Doug Epperly, told reporters at the time that he was hesitant to stop the event because it was a charity event, but he says fair is fair. Each of the men posts $280 a bond, and they're released. Well, they get a lawyer and appeal this straight to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, to have it thrown out. And the legal brief from their lawyer, W. Dale Green, is so great. He writes, "The petitioners are showmen, actors, artist thespians, not engaged in any contest of strength, but rather engaged in the thespian arts of facial grimaces, make-believe, mat-pounding, and use of all the props. While the petitioners may have billed themselves as wrestlers, a rose is a rose, and the public at large knows it."
That's so great. And then what was the other unique thing about that is that they printed not just who they had arrested.
Yeah, that seemed kind of petty. In the newspaper accounts, they printed both the wrestlers' legal given names and their ring names. So these guys who were only known as Chief Black Eagle or the Cuban Assassin, Google didn't exist, Facebook didn't exist. They didn't know that these weren't, you know, legit personas. They all of a sudden in the local papers, the wrestlers' real names appear beside their ring names. They appeal all the way to the state Supreme Court. The documents are kind of lost to history. I was finally able to get the law library in the state capitol to track down an entry in the court's daily diary to figure out what happened. They threw out the charge. We don't know why. We don't know what the arguments were. But they threw out the charges, and the guys were – I mean, from that point on, they weren't hassled by the Athletic Commission anymore. One thing about it, though, after run-ins with the State Athletic Commission, that's when WOAY changed the name of the show from Saturday Night Wrestling to Saturday Night Wrestling. And then they would add a disclaimer. And I think this is years before WWF or anybody did this kind of stuff. They added a disclaimer to the beginning of their broadcast: "Prearranged for your entertainment. This is not an athletic event."
Wow.
It didn't make one bit of difference to anybody watching it. You know, it was once the show was on, it was on.
And that was kind of how they skirted the Athletic Commission, right? Is this is not wrestling, it's wrestling.
It's wrestling. It's not an athletic event. We say that right at the beginning of the show. That satisfied the Athletic Commission and didn't bother the fans one bit.
What were some of the stories you heard about how fervent the audience was watching at home? Because WAY ended up having to recoup a few viewers, right?
I don't know that they ever reimbursed people for this, but Shirley told me a story while I was interviewing him. He's at the station because in addition to wrestling, he also did newscasts and commercials and all kinds of stuff. He was a jack of all trades. But while he was at the station one day, this lady who was there to record a church show, she was singing in a local choir. They had come there to record for one of the religious programs. She comes up to Shirley Love and says, "Mr. Love, can my grandpa's a big fan. Can I bring him up so he can meet you?" And Shirley says, "Why, sure." And the woman goes and gets her grandpa and brings him up. And the old guy, Shirley says, isn't saying much. And she said, "Papa, tell Mr. Love what happened Saturday night." The old guy doesn't want to say anything. And she says, "All right, I'll tell him. His favorite wrestler was in the ring. He got really upset that the referee wasn't seeing the dirty, underhanded tactics the heel was using on him. He got so mad that he went in the other room, got his shotgun, came back into the living room, and blew up the TV. And his granddaughter says, "Pop, all that didn't hurt that referee one bit." He said, "Well, you don't see him anymore, do you?"
For a wrestler, especially like nowadays, you would love to have that kind of heat.
Oh, man.
That's what everybody wants, right? They don't want their tires slashed anymore, and they'd rather not have sugar in the gas tank. But if they can make somebody so mad that they want to turn their TV off.
Or shoot it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one thing that's been lost. In wrestling, nobody's blown up TVs anymore. TVs were expensive back then, too.
Oh, man.
I mean, if you do the inflation adjustment, they were like, they'd be like $4,000 in today's money.
Which is just exactly how badly these people hated is that they were willing to destroy the most expensive appliance in their house.
Yep.
All right, Zach, it's great to have you in the studio. Zach Harold's managing editor of West Virginia Living Magazine. And he wrote an article called "Live from Oak Hill" about Saturday Night Wrestling from WOAY. Thanks for being with us, Zach.
Thank you. Love the show.
So if you're like me, you probably learned a thing or two or three about indie pro wrestling today. It was very moving to hear just how much wrestling means to the fans, wrestlers, and promoters. It even helped my friend, Adam Harris, get through one of the most difficult times in his life. That's powerful. In our everyday lives, we're forced to suppress our natural urges to yell or scream, stand up and cheer, or I don't know about you, but sometimes I just want to throat punch somebody. In the world of wrestling, we get to watch some people actually act on those instincts. Maybe it's this idea that despite physical and mental or emotional abuse, these wrestlers continuously get up and keep going, both in the ring and out. That's inspiring. Do you have a favorite wrestling story? What does wrestling mean to you? Do you know someone who wrestled professionally? Did they have injuries? What do you think kept them coming back? Send us a tweet at InAppalachia or an email to InsideAppalachia@wvpublic.org. Until next week, thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia. Music in today's show was provided by Ben Townsend and Alan Cathead Johnston. Roxy Todd is our producer. Our executive producer is Jesse Wright. He and Ibby Caputo edited our show this week. Our audio mixer is Patrick Stevens. Molly Bourne is our web editor. Chuck Roberts, Emily Hilliard, and Xander Alloy also contributed to this piece. And a special thanks to Adam Harris, who took time out of his busy Mountain Stage schedule to work on the show. If you'd like to listen to any part of this episode again, don't forget you can subscribe or download all of our stories on Apple Podcasts, Downcast, WVPublic.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jessica Lilly. Inside Appalachia is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. with career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.